You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent. As team building is on everyone's minds right now, the topic of leadership remains a hot one in the real estate industry. So we've started a series of interviews we're calling the Leadership Diaries to gain some insights into the habits and minds of successful leaders both in and out of the industry, just to give our readers and listeners some new and different perspectives that can be applied to your own businesses. The first leader in this series is one of AAPM's speakers, Joanna Ferrari. Joanna has travelled the world training sales teams all over the globe. She was CEO of the Tony Robbins business in Australia and has coached and trained other CEOs throughout the world. And while we talk transformation a lot at Elite Agent with our popular Transform programs for agents, Joanna literally is the queen of transformation through both personal experience and leading others through change. In this podcast, we talk about what Joanna learned from Tony Robbins, where great ideas come from in her business, how to help new employees understand culture, and much, much more. After listening to this, hopefully you'll find reason to have another look at Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, and also, of course, come to meet Joanna in person at AAPM. I hope you enjoy this first episode of the Leadership Diaries with the very entertaining, insightful, and super intelligent Joanna Ferrari. So, welcome to the podcast, Joanna Ferrari.
Hello, how are you?
It's fantastic to have you here, and we're so excited to see you speaking at AAPM this year. Can't wait for that.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited about it as well.
So we're going to ask you some questions this afternoon about leadership. This is a part of a series that we like to call the Leadership Diaries, where we ask successful leaders like yourself a series of questions to gain some insights for people who might be aspiring to leadership or might be looking to take the next step. So here we go. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. So first question, what was your first job and what did it teach you?
Okay. So my first job was I got a sales role with Anthony Robbins.
Wow.
And I read the book Unlimited Power. And I called up to California and said, I need to go to work for this guy. And they're like, oh, well, we don't actually have any jobs in California. I'm like, that's great, because I'm in Chicago. They're like, oh my gosh, we've got somebody there that's actually looking for people. So I went in, and as I was walking to the office, there was a guy walking out, and he had this giant Cheshire smile, you know, Cheshire cat smile. And I was like, oh no. And so when I got in and met the guy who was running the office, he said, oh, I just gave the last field rep position away. And I was like, oh, well, do you have anything? And he's like, well, I do need a telemarketing manager. And I went, oh my God, that's my forte. And he went, great, you're hired. And I had never had any experience in telemarketing or sales. And so what I realized was that sometimes you do have to fake it till you make it. And you have to find the confidence in you to then back up whatever it is that you've gotten yourself into. So
yeah.
And it was the beginning of a very long relationship with that organization.
Yeah, interesting, because you actually became the CEO of Tony Robbins' business in Australia, right?
I did, yeah. Let's see, I had actually gotten that job in 1989. I had done a lot of traveling and training sales teams around the US, Canada, the UK, and then I'd been over here to Australia a couple of times. And I came back to do a speaking tour with, and I'm sure maybe you or your audience probably already know Brian Tracy.
Yeah.
Okay. So
he's the Eat the Frog guy, isn't he?
The Eat the Frog guy. Yes, he is. And so I had known Brian for a number of years, and we were actually touring Australia. And the people from Anthony Robbins approached me and asked me if I wanted to be the CEO. I'm like, yes, I want to move to Australia.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a really good time. I really learned a lot. And when you're working with somebody like an Anthony Robbins, you can't help but learn a tremendous amount of things. So that was a brilliant time. Yes.
Yeah. Tony Robbins has such wonderful lessons, and he's written so many books, and I know in the industry there are so many fans of his work. What would be your favorite lesson from Tony Robbins?
Everything happens for the right reason, and it serves me. Once I got that into my head, once I understood what that meant, I live by that. I mean, I've been through so many different things. And when I learned and just remembered that, I went, how did that serve me? I stopped calling things good and bad because I started recognizing that, you know, you get two steps past something good and it fell apart, you know, or you get past something that's really horrible. And next thing you know, the sun was shining. And so that really was a very powerful lesson in my life.
Incredible. So you're an incredibly busy person now as well, coaching and consulting and all sorts of things like that. We always like to ask leaders if they're part of the 5 a.m. club. What does the first hour of your day look like? How does it go after that?
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. So I am a very busy person. I am up by 5:30 a.m. and no one gets to talk to me until after 7 o'clock. And that's not because I need coffee. Some of it is, but not all of it. Most of it is because that is my time. That is when I actually get my plan locked in. I know my three majors that I need to have accomplished before 10 o'clock. And I do that every day like clockwork. And at 10 o'clock, my day becomes mine. So I make sure that I've got that done because I own a couple of businesses now. And I also do, you know, my speaking and a lot of coaching. So I have to schedule that all in. And I think by being up in part of that 5 a.m. club, I get so much done. My days might seem a little bit longer, but I get everything done that I want. And yeah, I just love it.
So that's like your hour and a half of power that you get what you need to get done before the world.
Yeah, that's me checking to see what's top of my mind and writing those things down, writing down the three majors that I need to do. If I get my three majors done for the day, then I really don't push to do many minors, but I make sure that my head is clear so that I can be creative if I need to, I can be logical or emotional. But when you try and solve everything in that cluttered brain, you get very little done.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I think it's the way some of us are wired. I know I'm definitely wired in such a way that I like to go and crawl into a cave for a little while just to...
Absolutely.
I call it clearing my cache, computer term. So obviously working for someone like Tony Robbins has had a tremendous impact on you as a leader. Who would you say you're learning from right now?
Oh, I've got a number of people. I do something very strange. I actually will listen to things that are way outside my comfort zone and start to learn from those. Because I love to do the two processes that I use. One is called synthetic creativity. And the other one is just simultaneous learning. You know, you can cross-pollinate things when you're actually learning a lot of things outside your comfort zone. And so there's a guy named James H. Simmons. And he is a mathematician, and he took all of his math knowledge and learned how to apply that in trading. And he's a billionaire. I was never good at math, but I thought, hey, you know what? He's not using math the way everybody teaches math. He's taken it and turned it into real world principles. So that's somebody I really look up to, and I absolutely love it. And because of him, I'm actually thinking of going back and studying mathematics again. So I love that. I love physics, love physics. And if anybody knows who Mr. Feynman is or heard of the Feynman technique, have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't heard of it. Tell me about it.
So Richard Feynman was an incredible physicist, and he passed away, but I've been studying and reading his books and actually watching all the YouTube videos. Because of him, I started studying chaos theory, which is absolutely amazing. When you learn about chaos theory, it's so brilliant for your brain. You realize that everything is chaos, but it also has an underlying calmness to it. So I've been studying, you know, a lot about both of those. And I've actually restarted studying someone that I used to work with, which was Jay Abraham previously, and did a lot of consulting with him. And so I've been restudying a lot of my marketing strategies because I'm actually working on a book for small business. And so, yeah, just studying those three things has been really good. But in the evening, I do one more thing that's really strange. I've got the times tables, Spanish 101, something on physics, something on metaphysics. I always have six things playing in the background, and I put them all up on YouTube, and I put them really, 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 really quiet, so they're almost inaudible. And then I let those play through the night, every single night. Learn through osmosis.
I was going to say, so is that real?
It's very real because you don't always get the technique. You can't speak Spanish, for example, but your brain starts to hear different things. And that's really what it's geared to do, is allow me to think different. And that certainly does. So I have a very strange brain now because of all that.
I'm going to try that and I'll get back to you. So you said you have a couple of businesses now. Where do great ideas in your businesses come from?
Oh, that's so good. I was actually just with a client and a good friend of mine today, Joseph, and we were actually talking a little bit about this. So what I love doing is I love taking a look at what is the common thing that's happening in a business. I look at the market, I look at the industry, and I find out what everybody's doing. And what you tend to find is that most businesses in an industry are doing everything exactly the same, and they're usually going after the exact same 10% of all the potential business in that industry, right? Mm. Everybody wants the client that's ready to buy now. Yep. I do not. I don't. And I call that, like, you've heard of the Blue Ocean Strategy?
Yes, blue ocean, red ocean, yep.
So I like to make sure that when you look at the bloody red ocean of all the leads, the way I say it is, I want to get as many leads out of the ocean and into my swimming pool, right? Because if I get them in my swimming pool, we're having a lot more fun. I can talk to them. It's not as threatening. It's not as big. But I try and get those clients very, very early. And then I like to give them a tremendous amount of value. Everybody tries to hold their secrets back and not tell the clients all these things. I like to give them everything up front. Here's everything I do. This is how I do it. And this is what we're going to do. Do you want to work with us? And I absolutely incubate people through the process. So once I find out what everybody's doing, I go to look and find out where is the 60, 70, 80% of people that aren't being talked to. So I'll give you an example. Here in Australia, you know, we've got the NBN. And when you look at it, 35 to 40% of people are ready to buy NBN. The rest are not. So I started doing some advertising saying, if you're not ready to switch to the NBN, fantastic. Let me show you how you can save money in your small business. And next thing you know, we're getting tons and tons of people coming to us, and we're helping them to save money. We're supporting them. We're making sure they're well taken care of. And it's just a really counterintuitive principle that anybody can use to really dig deeper into their industry, get more leads, get them out of the competitive market, get them into your own swimming pool, and then start to talk them through how they can actually use you. And people really love that. They love the process more.
I think that's really interesting. What you just said is that you give them a whole lot of information that they're going to value before they become a client.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of people wait till someone becomes a client, till they let them in on the really good stuff. And so turning that on its head is a pretty interesting strategy.
Well, I'll tell you why I do it. Okay. You won't get any competitors because a lot of people won't take time to do these things, even if it's the most brilliant idea in the world. The reason I do it is so simple. I want my clients to be so smart that when somebody else comes after them, they're like, hang on, wait a minute. I know the top five questions to ask you to see if you are somebody better than working with Joanna's company. And that's why I do it. Because if I make them smart, I make them smart for our relationship, and then they don't go running off.
Yeah, very clever. Very, very clever.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so here's a bit of a tricky one maybe. What is your favorite question to ask someone in a job interview, and what does their answer tell you about the person?
I'm not sure that it's a question. I survive a lot on my instincts, my intuitions. And when you have an emotional intelligence, as my friend Joseph said to me today, because you have a lot of emotional intelligence. And so when I look at a person, I meet with them, if we don't click emotionally, if there's not at least a connection on some points, then I probably wouldn't even ask them the question. But I can tell you the three areas that I look to make sure that I have a connection with. And that's what makes it different than just being, you know, all woo-woo about it, right?
Yep.
I want to know how they make a decision, because if they're not good at making choices, then that's probably not going to be somebody that I'll be able to work with. I know I'm much more of a visionary, so I need somebody that's good at making decisions on the back end to support me. But I also look at how they relate to the world. If everything is negative and down and it's going to fall apart tomorrow, that's not somebody that I'm going to get along with, because I have a very low tolerance for that kind of thing. Now, I don't always like positive mental attitude, right? But if I'm positive, somebody's negative, I don't want to be around them.
You know? That's a good statement.
So how they relate to things. And then the third one is, I want to know what they want to experience. So I guess that's the three things that I do ask. I want to know what they want to experience by coming to work for a company. You know, do they want to start here, build a structure, and then grow? Or they just want to come in and stay there? I want to know how they make decisions, how they relate to the world, and I want to know what kind of experience they want to have and if I can then give it to them.
Mm. If you were to hire someone new, and hiring is obviously a challenge for not just the real estate industry, but in all small businesses, I mean, it is for us as well. What do you think the best way is for a leader to help a new team member understand the culture of the business?
I think that it starts in the interview. So I used to run 300-seat call centers. Mm-hmm. And when we would hire people, we had a very simple process. Whatever the role was, we had to give them something to actually take a look at, to present to us first. So if they were going to be on the phone with us, for example, we would give them a script, tell them to rehearse it, get on the phone with them, because that's how our customers were going to meet them, and then have them do the presentation to us. And you can tell very quickly if somebody's done something with the script, they were just such a hotshot that they just tried to read it. And so you could tell from that. But then what we would do is we would say, okay, great. Now we would know what they would do if they weren't being paid. So you know what they'll do when they are being paid. How seriously were they taking it? But the other thing that we did was this. We wanted to make sure that not only did they do something with it, but that they were coachable. So we would then ask them, okay, we just want you to change this one thing. Mm. And we would see how they would do it. If they did that, we would know that they were a right fit for our culture in the first place.
Yeah.
And then bringing them in and letting them meet some of their peers and some of the managers, you feel like you're meeting friends. And so it made it a lot easier to actually represent what the culture is like. So if you don't have a good culture and haven't really chose your people, I would tell you, go read Jim Collins' Good to Great, get the right people on your bus, right?
Yep.
And that way, make sure that you invite other right people to get on the bus with you. And that was the technique that we used.
Yeah. So you just mentioned Jim Collins' Good to Great, which is another favorite of everyone's. I could just sit and jam books with you all afternoon. Seriously, it would be a great book jam.
You'll have to talk about my favorite book then, though. My favorite book since I was 16 years old was Think and Grow Rich.
Oh, okay. You read that at 16.
Not only did I read it, by the time I got to the age of 21, I read it every year. I put out an ad to find someone that had worked for Napoleon Hill, and I met him. His name was Lloyd McCullough. I went and met with him, and I found out how Napoleon Hill really taught his techniques and strategies. And he didn't teach them in the order in which they're taught in the book, which was phenomenal to me. And that has been a book that I've probably given away more than any other book in the world, at least a couple hundred.
Mm, wow.
And I used to teach from it in my course, my business course, and I did it very, very differently. We took the book and I took the first two chapters and the introduction and the first chapter on desire. And I used to terrify people because I would give them all paperback copies of it and tell them to rip those first two chapters off. Because what I learned about the book is that the first two chapters is everything you needed to know. Thoughts are things, and you need to have a strong desire. And the rest of the book was written to actually be all of the strategies and techniques that you use to fulfill the first two chapters. There's my book jam for you.
That's an amazing tip, actually. I'm going to go back and have another look at that one now. I mean, that's what's interesting about looking at these different books and things like that from the greats through different perspectives. My favorite was To Kill a Mockingbird, still is.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's not a business book, but I think there's so many lessons in that that apply to sales. Let's go back to Jim Collins, who is obviously one of the greats on leadership. What is one characteristic that you think every leader needs to have, the most important characteristic for a leader today?
I think that the number one thing that you need to be able to do is remain a person. You need to be leadable before you can actually lead. And so you have to let things influence you. You have to stay real. If you don't, you become about the numbers and about profit, and you forget that your people have a personality and that they're human beings. Mm. And if you don't lead from a human perspective, I'm not interested in knowing you.
The days of leaders saying, there's your desk, there's your chair, really are over, aren't they? There's your phone, off you go.
Actually, that's the problem. They're not. That is why you've had such a rise in small businesses, because you know, they're like, I don't just want a desk. If I'm just going to have a desk, then I'm going to own the desk. Hmm. And so then you create a lot of entrepreneurs. And I'm all for small business because you get a lot of very agile businesses. But leadership still has a tendency to, well, you've got three layers, right? I mean, you've got your leadership, you've got managers, and then you've got employees. And if you just look at that equation, you'll find that at the top level, they want to talk about, is everything profitable? At the management level, they want to make sure that it's in order. But at the bottom, they just want to know what to do so that they can actually make it happen. But the most interesting thing is that as you go down through those three groups, the largest group has the least amount of information. And, you know, you're looking at the tip of the iceberg that is, you know, if you just do that, here's your desk, here's your phone, you know, go to it mentality. You can't really grow a business from that perspective. You can't really become profitable. And you're driven to always be spending a lot of money to get new customers instead of actually investing in your people to take care of the clients that you have so that they want to do more business with you.
Mm. I think a lot of leaders struggle with, I mean, this is probably a personal struggle of mine as much as it occurs in the industry, when you get real estate agents who have done really well at listing and selling, and then they take the step up to being business owner, and then they struggle to let go.
Well, you know, I think then instead of talking about good to great, that people should be, if they're in that situation, go read The E-Myth again by Michael Gerber, because if you haven't read that book and you aren't applying those strategies to your business, then don't read Good to Great. It's a great read, but The E-Myth will actually get you further along. It gets you out of the technician's mindset and gets you into the understanding of how you actually grow a business. And that's critical.
Yeah, and that's really topical right now in the industry, as well as doing it all yourself is just not scalable.
Oh, it's not. You know, you've got one head and five hats. And
today I'm a web developer, tomorrow I'm a designer.
Exactly. But, you know, that's one of the things that I spend a lot of time doing. My friend Joseph that I was with today, he owns a company called J Legal. And what they do is they bring businesses in-house lawyers, or they work with, you know, private practices to bring them lawyers. And we were just talking about how to actually break down the business so that it becomes very simple, so you know what your variables are, you know, what your costs, what your ROI, and how do you make decisions. And it's so important that a business understand those things, But also have to remember that you have to bring people in to facilitate that. And if you're not studying people, if you don't like human behavior and understand that you can't keep throwing rules over people over and more, that you have to keep your rules simple and teach them what you really want them to be and do, and they'll do it. People are very simple creatures, but when we don't treat them like human beings, when we treat them like they're stupid, they act like they're stupid.
That's that osmosis thing again, isn't it? If you know, you become...
Yeah, sure is.
What is the worst advice in leadership that you've ever heard from anyone?
The worst advice... I really don't know. Maybe we can come back to that. Maybe it'll pop into my brain. But I have a low tolerance for stupidity. And so when I hear that, a lot of times I have this delete button inside my head and I think it erases it.
That's actually a really good answer. Who has room on their limited hard drive up here?
Exactly.
For stuff that doesn't need to be there.
True.
So... we've talked a lot about what good leadership looks like, and part of that is being a real human being. But sometimes, you know, like in my experience, I've met leaders that are afraid to be themselves. Is there anything you've ever been afraid to do, and how did you overcome that?
Oh, I think I'm going to save that one for when I come to conference, because I don't have any fears anymore. That sounds really bad. And I'm not fearless, though. I just don't have any fears. Well, I'll say it to you this way, and it's something worth repeating at the conference anyway. And it's simply this. When I hear the word no, when I hear the word impossible, when somebody says this is a challenge or there's a lot of risk or uncertainty, you know, I only have one answer for even the word no. So one answer for all those things, and it's simply bring it on. Just bring it on, because that's when I'm at my best. I love that. So I'm not fearless, but I certainly don't mind taking on a challenge. You know what the cool part is about taking risk? The only thing you can do is fail. And here's what I know about that. 95% of the people listening to this are afraid of failure, and I love it because they won't take a chance, and I most certainly will.
Even if you do fail, it means you've learned something.
Yeah, or fallen down flat on my face and had a good laugh at myself.
Yeah, I feel you on that one, because I'm a pretty clumsy person most days of the week too. What is the most important thing you're working on right now, and how are you making sure it happens?
The most important thing that I'm working on is I have a huge freaking goal. So I will tell you that in the first part of my life, I was very successful, international speaker, twice published author, and I'd done so many things, but I'd been through a number of things that just crushed my spirit. And so my resolve, because I don't have goals, I have a resolve. When I resolve to do something, the worst place to be is between me and that resolve, okay? So my resolve is by next December to be a millionaire. Get back to that level. And so I've set myself up to be able to do that. And people always ask me, how are you going to do that? And I say, well, how is really none of my business. You probably heard Brian Tracy say that before. How is none of your business? Just know why you're going to do it and make a commitment that no matter what happens, good, bad, ugly, you are still committed to that. And so that's what I'm doing right now. I'm working on that, and I'm building my resolve and making it so that I'm working on my 8 different confidence levels, and that I'm trusting myself, and that I stand on the line. I don't let anything back me down from having that.
It's interesting. I was actually talking to somebody about that last night. It sounds to me like you're saying it's about saying the words and maybe not necessarily seeing the whole staircase. You don't have to see the whole staircase to take one step towards your goal.
I'll say it this way. It's like there's 1,000 steps between me and that goal. But what I did was I ran, I put it up at the very top, I came back down, and now I got to figure out how to get back there because I'm exhausted.
Fair enough. So what is the biggest message that you will be delivering to the people attending AAPM this year?
the biggest message that we'll be talking about, because we're going to be talking about transition. How I became known as the transition specialist is because I help people to get into, out of, or unstuck from a transition and help them get through the five stages that it takes to get through that. I'm going to show them so quickly, so easily, that right where they at, they have everything that they need to actually get to the goal or resolve that they have set for themselves, and that they have to go through some things. And I'm going to show them what happens when you try to avoid going through that. When you come out of this session, you're going to know where you're at, and you're going to know the three biggest challenges that anyone has to go through to be able to achieve what they want in life. And they're going to be so simple, but they're the biggest barriers to you having what you want. And if you will just take time to get through the three of them and really examine them, I promise you that you can actually have whatever you want. And I do believe that statement is true.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time, Joanna Ferrari. I have loved talking to you. And
thank you.
Looking forward to looking up those books again for a start, and especially coming to see you at ARPM.
I'm so looking forward to meeting you and giving you a big hug when I meet you. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. I look forward to meeting everybody. Bring your best questions and a big notebook.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.